Tanimirobhishtam stapitam yena bhutale Swayam rupa kadam ayam dadati swapadantikam Pandeham shigra shiutaparakamalam Shigram vaishnavamscha Shirupam sagrajatam Sahagana raganatam vitam tam sajivam Sadvaitam savadutam Krishna Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Sakansvitamscha Hey Krishna Karna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosute Tapta Kanchena Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Krishubhanu Sita Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakapa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sinubhivacha Patitanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Chedvaiti Gadadhar Shivastadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 13. Rahugana converses with Jadvara, text number 13. Anyonya Vita Vyati Sangha Rida Vaira Anubandha Vivahan Mita Cha Advani Amushmin Uru Kritstra Vitabhara Upasagai Viharan Vipana Anyonya Vita Anyonya vita vyati sangavrida Vairanubando vivahan mitis cha Advanyamushmen nuru krishavit vita Badhopasagai viharan vipana Anyonya vita vyati sangavrida Vairanubando vivahan mitischa Advanyamushmin nurub kritstra vita Bhadhopasagai viharan vipana
Adhanya Husbin Guru Krishna
Ladies, Anyonya Vita Vyati Sangha Vrida Anisacha Anisacha Padopa Saga Vyan Vipana Anyonya with one another. Vita Vyati Sangha, by monetary transactions. Rida, increased. Vaira Anubandha, one is encumbered by enmity. Vivahan, sometimes marrying. Mita, one another. Sha and Advani, on the path of material existence. Amushmin, that. Urukritsha, by great difficulties. Vitabhara, by scarcity of money. Upasargai, by diseases. Viharan, wandering. Vipana, one becomes fully embarrassed. Translation purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Due to monetary transactions, relationships become very strained and end in enmity. Sometimes the husband and wife walk on the path of material progress, and to maintain the relationship, they work very hard. Sometimes due to scarcity of money or due to disease conditions, they are embarrassed and almost die. Please repeat. Due to monetary transactions, relationships become very strained and end in enmity. Sometimes a husband and wife walk on the path of material progress. And to maintain the relationship, they work very hard. Sometimes due to scarcity of money, or due to disease conditions, they are embarrassed and almost die. Report. In this material world, there are many transactions between peoples and societies, as well as between nations. Gradually, these end in enmity between the two parties. Similarly, in the marriage relationship, money transactions are sometimes overpowered by the dangerous conditions of material life. One then becomes diseased and monetarily embarrassed. In the modern age, most countries have developed economically, but due to business exchanges, relationships seem to be strained. Finally, wars are declared between nations, and as a result of these upheavals, there is destruction all over the world, and people suffer heavily. So the verse again. Anyonya vita viti sangha vridha Vairanubando vihan mitascha advanyamushmin urukritschavita badopasargai viharan vipana. Due to monetary transactions, relationships become very strained and end in enmity. Sometimes a husband and wife walk on the path of material progress, To maintain their relationship, they work very hard. Sometimes due to scarcity of money or due to disease conditions, they're embarrassed and almost die. Namo Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutaye Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskyadyade Siddharane. This, of course, is the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Bhagavatam ends with a description of, well, not ends, but there's another chapter before the, maybe it is the last chapter, the description of the hellish planets. We can expect that the Bhagavatam in this particular canto is going to paint a very pretty picture of materialistic life. Put all kinds of decorations, roses and garlands and sweets, and then describe materialistic experience. On the other hand, there is a difference between living in the material world in spiritual life and living in the material world in material life. It is not that the Bhagavatam paints everything as black in the material world. It paints progress in spiritual life is very bright, and the lack of that is very dark. On one side, if one is engaged in devotional service, then the future is very bright. And on the other side, if there is no devotional service, then the future is very dark. In the Veda culture, which is the beginning of the progress towards spiritual enlightenment, it defines the path of spiritual existence, or how to come to spiritual existence through religiosity, economic development, regulated sense gratification, and then finally the seeking after liberation. So this is the purpose of the Vana and Ashram system. The Kshatriyas, under the guidance of the Brahmins who know the goal of life, they establish religious principles, or at least they don't create the religious principles, but at least they make sure that appropriately, according to the advice that's given to them by higher authorities, namely the Brahmins or other saintly personalities, they put into effect what is the purpose of religion, so that people are able to regulate their sense gratification, their economic development and their sense gratification in such a way as that they make progress towards the goal of life, which is liberation, at least from the material concept of life, if not the moksha, which is liberation into the spiritual realm of existence, beyond even Brahman or Paramatma, into the realm of Goloka, or at least Vaikuntha. So human form of life is meant for such regulation. But, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that not everyone is very enthusiastic about religious principles. We can't expect in the material world, especially in Kali Yuga, that everyone's going to be very satisfied with what the Bhagavatam has to say. It is not meant to be a, what is that? I forget what they call it, a kind of class where you, a feel-good class, make everyone feel good. The Bhagavatam, especially here, we have Jadvarat speaking to the head Grihastha in the world, because after all, Grihastha means he takes care of one family, and the king, he takes care of many families. And what to speak of the emperor, who takes care of all the families in the world. He's not painting a very pretty picture of materialistic life, where, as Krishna says, chintyam aparyam cha pralayantam upashitya kama paboga paramam etavam iti nischitya asha pashu shuterabhada kama krodha parayana ihanti kama bogarta anye naranta sanchaya. They believe that to gratify their senses unto the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. So that's the beginning of that verse. In other words, the demons, those were actually demons, they say, asatyam apratishtam te jagaro horanishwaram aparash param sambhutyam kemaya kamahaitukam. They say there is no God. There's no sense of wasting your time trying to become God conscious. That all the resources in the material world are just meant for sense gratification. And there is no other goal besides that. And anyone who's engaged in any other goal besides sense gratification is just deluding themselves and wasting their time. Luckily, Krishna doesn't agree with them. As a matter of fact, Krishna says, Yidate moha kalilam, that such people have that conception of life, they're living in a dense forest of delusion, which is being described here in more details than is described in the Bhagavad Gita. What is that dense forest of delusion? How, when we forget religious principles, we forget that the goal is to become God conscious, Krishna conscious, how we get entangled in so many other goals, which all evolve around economic development, trying to control the material nature, the resources, only for the purpose of trying to satisfy the unbridled senses. And although people try to paint a very pretty picture of their attempts to gratify their senses, they call it, you know, United Nations, or they call it some other League of Nations, they call it some attempt, and they give it, or philanthropy, or sociology, whatever they want to call it. But ultimately, Rishabhdev actually says that Krishna paratak sutova mito bipadyeta griha vratana. Although they glorify the cooperation that they have between states, they call themselves the allies or whatever they call themselves, but ultimately, the alliances are simply just groups of thieves getting together to rob some other group of thieves. And the group of thieves that win, they're the heroes. And they write the textbooks, the history, and proclaim how nice they did, how they were, whatever they did was good, and whatever the other person did was bad. Very simple. You don't find, and then, of course, sometimes they allow some discussion about the merits of, because they're so liberal and so open-minded, they let other people express their misguided opinions that perhaps they may have done something wrong. Or as one lieutenant general in the American Air Force said, that if we would have lost the war against Germany, then I would have been tried as a war criminal, and for good reasons. So, however much they're expert at glorifying each other, the winners, and taking the losers as the worst enemies of mankind that we were saved from, and that now they're so kind, as whatever they say is the absolute truth, today, and of course tomorrow when it changes, it becomes the absolute truth tomorrow too. So this is called cheating. But of course in a world where everyone is engaged in cheating, where everyone is involved in more or less that type of mentality, because there is no understanding that there is a God and that He's the goal of life. That Krishna, compared to Krishna, everything else is tuchavat, or insignificant. That if one gets Krishna, then everything else seems relatively insignificant, or everything has its place and is seeing what the value is. How to that value of using things for Krishna makes something valuable. Whether it's the most insignificant thing, if it's used for Krishna, a leaf, a fruit, a flower, some water, if it's offered with love to Krishna, then it becomes very valuable. And if something is very big, some huge amount of property and wealth and whatever, but if it's not used for Krishna, then it becomes simply, as it says in the Bhagavatam, a king may have a heavy turban, but if it's not bound down before the deities, then it simply is a heavy weight which is pushing him down into material existence. So of course here, in this particular part of the Bhagavatam, the negative side of the use of wealth or other things or sense gratification is being described, because there has to be some explanation of it. Otherwise, we may confuse and we think that, you know, everything is all right, and people who do perform devotional service, they're all right, and people who just are engaged in economic development for sense gratification, they're also all right. We're all all right. Prabhupada said, they say everyone is good, especially New Age philosophy. You're good, I'm good, we're all good. But Prabhupada said, he said, we're good and you're bad. We're bad doesn't mean he was condemning everyone. We're good if we're engaging things in Krishna's service. And it's bad not to do that. And gradually it was explained about the universe here and the structure of the universe, etc., etc. And then the results of not properly engaging things in Krishna's service winds up in the last chapter of this particular canto, where we have Kumbhipaka, Raurava, and other types of less than pleasant destinations. No one is going to buy a vacation ticket to Kumbhipaka. And after hearing about the hellish planets, where in Kali Yuga it is said that in the Bhagavatam, the Yamaraj, he's overworked. It's called, he has over-endeavor. So he needs a vacation. He's overworked so much that he needs a vacation. Just for Jagai and Madai, just two of the rogues in Kali Yuga, there was so much, because I guess they didn't have a computer at that time, 5,000 years ago. So the scribes of Yamaraj were handwriting all the different sinful activities of just these two rogues. And they were writing they were doing so many sinful activities, these two rogues, that they was filling up books and books and books of sinful activities, and they were throwing these books into bottomless holes, and the bottomless holes were getting filled up. Maybe they have a computer, maybe things have become streamlined a little bit better, but certainly the amount of sinful activities going on is also vastly increased. Because people are in ignorance. They think devotional service either is a myth or is one of the many varieties of alternatives they have in this world in order to become happy. A few failures in life who couldn't really make it very well in the material world, who didn't know couldn't get their degree in business and in computer science or something, they became Hare Krishnas and they go out and make their living chanting on the street, and people take pity on them and give them some donation so they can get something to eat. Some people have that conception. As Krishna says, under lust, anger, and greed, if that's the only conception we have, then naturally, under lust, we think, under the mode of ignorance, we don't see anything beyond the material nature. It's all in all, especially modern science is very adverse to even investigating or giving any credibility to anything beyond what's perceivable by our gross senses. Even the very scientists themselves, they discover things which are more subtle, the workings of, for instance, mystic power. They just deny it. It doesn't matter what it is. If it doesn't fit into their paradigm, into their gross conception that everything is made out of matter and there is nothing beyond matter, that everything has come from matter, everything will be matter forever, then they just reject it. And therefore, obviously, with such a conception of life, people have no interest in spiritual life because they don't believe it exists. Modern science, which is just emphasizing just gross matter, even to the point where it's absurd and obvious that they're wrong, but if you say the same lie, the same misconception, you distort reality again and again, and you make it a criteria for any kind of material advancement economically or socially, that you have to accept these lies and make as if you believe them if you want to socially advance, then obviously people become bewildered very easily. Just like they have intelligent design. They look into the cell and they see everything is so nicely organized. More, just one little cell out of trillions of cells in the body has a system of transportation, communication, production of energy in the cell, elimination of the unwanted things, a disposal system, which is vastly more sophisticated and more consistent and works vastly more scientifically and consistently than a city like New York or Brussels. That's just one little cell. And they're claiming it all came about by accident. That just by some combination of chemicals, as if by a combination of chemicals, you throw a bunch of bricks and steel together, it's going to make Brussels. Maybe it will, but it would take quite a long time. And if that's obvious, or if it's not obvious to people, obviously people are becoming, rather than developing a perception of reality which is consistent with an intelligent understanding of what's going on here, they're actually made to be stupid. And if you're too intelligent, then you're considered to be somehow or another abnormal. If the emperor is coming down the street and he has no clothes, and when everyone is bowing down before the emperor as if he has and discussing how beautiful his clothes are, and if one little boy says, "Mom, why is the emperor going down the street naked?" Say that he has beautiful clothes like everyone else. So in the same way, by in a perspective on from the Bhagavatam's point of view, that there is a God, there is a Krishna, and it's one who has the vision, it's obvious, and one who doesn't have the vision, then it's not obvious. And why is it not obvious? That their intelligence has been taken away by illusion. Systematically, in modern society, people are trained to be an illusion, to make the goal of life to forget about God, that God is for a few old people who have no other shelter, who can't enjoy sense gratification anymore, and they're about to die, so they don't know whether there's a God or not, so they go to the church and they put a little money in the box and they gamble that in case there is a God, we're placing our bets on him also. Bets on everything, including God. But no progressive, intelligent person is going to waste their lives actually looking for God. They should spend their life looking for money. They don't need God. You don't need the church. You simply have to go to the bank and pray for a loan. And then your life will become perfect and complete. But the Bhagavatam doesn't agree with that. That religiosity has to be the basis of economic development and sense gratification, or else there's no liberation from illusion. What to speak of realizing that we're Brahman, the danger is that the more we act without God, the more we act in an irregular way, just following the dictation of our senses and mind, then we fall more and more into illusion, and the result of illusion, Krishna says, is that there are many different levels of existence in the material world meant for different levels of illusion. Every Mac that people eat or fast food hamburger that they eat, not only according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya said for every hair on the cow that people are killing, that they live 1,000 years in hell for it. So now they've created cows which have more hair on them. And when you eat one hamburger, it's not one cow, it's millions of cows ground together. So who can estimate? Yamaraj is having a hard time figuring out where to put everyone. There are only 8,400,000 species of life, so it's hard to figure it out. On the other hand, if people actually understand that there is Krishna, there are laws of material nature, it's not happening by accident, we didn't get this present body by accident, our next phase of existence will not be by accident, it's all going according to certain laws, and that there is a lawgiver, and it's in our interest, in everyone's interest, to know what those laws are. So even from the material point of view, we can make the best possible existence or use of this human form of life and not wind up in some unfortunate situation our next lifetime. Therefore, the Bhagavatam is rather heavy, and those who give the class, they're supposed to be a little heavy also. Not that, you know, actually, why think about these unpalatable topics that people will become disturbed if they hear about hell, that actually there's still a few sects who believe in hell, that we've already decided that there is no hell, it was just a myth. And that, you know, sense gratification is alright as long as you're considerate of others, and that it's alright, some people are religious, some people are unreligious, some people are this, some people are that, but just accept everyone and live with everyone, be happy about it. There is no better or worse in this material world, it's all one. So this is all a product of the impersonalism coming from Sankaracharya. Just a degraded form of philosophy. Sankaracharya, at least he used Sanskrit to try to bewilder people, but they don't use Sanskrit anymore to bewilder people. Because people, their scripture is not the Bhagavatam, it's not the Vedas, their scripture is other things like Playboy magazine or Time magazine or other kinds of magazines, and that's their authority. If it's on television, it must be real. They wouldn't lie to us on television. They wouldn't lie to us in the magazine. Although repeatedly they can see again and again, whatever they say doesn't turn out to be what actually the facts are, but still they blindly follow because their knowledge has been taken by illusion. And what is the result? Chintyam apareyam cha pralayantam upashitya kama paboga paramam etavam iti nischitya. Etam drishtim avashtabhya nashtatmano nabhudaya Pravan Yuga Karmana Shaye Jagatohita. Etam Drishtim, when their intelligence has been taken away, when they don't accept God, when they accept some theory that everything is by accident, that there are no laws, there's nothing to learn about in this material world except to how to make more money and enjoy your senses in a more sophisticated way. There's nothing beyond that that's interesting. Then the result is Etam Drishtim Avashtavya Nashtatmano Nabhudaya. Then their intelligence becomes destroyed, their real intelligence. And what do? Because they're not interested in self-realization, they create horrible, unbeneficial works which are meant to destroy the world. Just like the Germans during World War II, or before World War II, they had this philosophy of eugenics. Everyone knows what eugenics are? What's that? Yeah, it's more or less the philosophy behind that there are certain unfortunate people in this world who are inferior, and that it would be better for them and for everyone else if they disappear. And since somehow or another, because they're less intelligent and they won't voluntarily disappear, therefore we'll help them out because we're more intelligent and we'll help them disappear. So this philosophy was not coming from Germany, actually it originates from certain philosophers or certain industrialists in America. And it was more or less these eugenicists in Germany and other places, especially in England, were being maintained and they were being supported, financed by certain very wealthy people in the world. As a matter of fact, IBM, one of the big computer places in America, was very much inclined towards this philosophy. And of course, Germany, under certain personalities, they put this philosophy into practice in a very systematic way. And anyone who's considered inferior, Jews, Slavic people, gypsies, diseased people, other kinds of religion, they were all systematically attempted to be eliminated one way or another. So, of course, from their point of view, they were becoming very successful, that they were going to create the master race. And then after World War II, many of these personalities, they were given shelter in other parts of Europe and America, and they continue on with their same philosophy, that there are certain unfortunate people that they deserve to be eliminated, or that certainly they deserve not to be reproducing and creating more of the same that they're like, that only very select people should actually be given the opportunity to become leaders and prominent, or even to exist in this world. Not surprisingly, in Europe, just recently, that kind of philosophy was manifested very clearly in the wars in the Balkans, which I'm visiting regularly. And you can see some of the remnants there. If you go to some places where all the mines just keep out, you know, skull and bones, don't walk here. And within the realm of the devotees' experience there, especially when I was visiting one place called Lika, which is the front battleground in the Croatia, then even after the war was over, people had this so much animosity that if you were from another nationality, then they planted bombs in your garden, so that when mines in your garden, so when you went to garden, then it blew you up. And this devotee happens to be a doctor, so he had one of his first clients, the people he had to treat, were people who were blown up by the mines planted in people's gardens. And even the policemen who came to investigate it, some of them also got blown up by the mines planted. So this philosophy, where everyone is different, we're good and you're bad, we're powerful, you're weak, we take control of you, as it degrades in ignorance, then it creates horrible, unbeneficial works. Practically, the whole food system is contaminated by pesticides, insecticides, herbicides, this side, that side, every side, you're completely covered. Genetically modified. When other living entities are fed this type of food, they get sick and die. So what do we expect? That human beings, they'll thrive on something which is poisonous for everyone else, but only human beings? So because of lack of God consciousness, if they really cared for people, if they were really interested that people should be healthy and happy and prosperous, then probably they need a few lessons from the Bhagavatam to how to actually do it, or at least from just common sense. So obviously people are not so stupid, leaders of society, the people who are running things, they're not so foolish, they can't read the statistics and figure out what they're actually doing. We may, of course, say that there are some good people and that they're trying to do good and that everyone is not bad and you're painting a very negative picture, but Bhagavatam says that if you're not God conscious, and which of the leaders is actually God conscious? Which are actually defending the rights of the animals in this world nowadays? Even in India, how much attacks, India is the leading exporter of leather in the world right now. And that leather comes from cows that they slaughter. So even in India, the motherland of religiosity Kali Yuga has become so prominent that even there the leadership is allowing things to go on, as if they're not going to get a reaction, or the people in India and other places won't get a reaction. They've lost their vision. And therefore they're allowing horrible, unbeneficial things to go on, and basically they don't believe in karma, they don't believe in God, they don't believe in what their destination is. But Bhagavatam is not so foolish. And we shouldn't be so foolish either, that everything will be all right, and that if a few people go out and protest, then the leadership will change, and everything will be very nice. There'll be peace, equality, love, and beauty, and harmony, and everything in the world, and there's just a few economic problems going on, and if they print up more money, everything will be all right. Now, only when people become interested in God consciousness, only when the laws of nature are explained to them, how things are actually working, only when they realize that the aim of life is self-realization and ultimately God-realization, only when they change their direction from hell to the spiritual world, only that way there's going to be any even improvement, what to speak of rapid degradation. At least if they stopped doing anything, at least they'd, put on the brakes from going to hell for a while, instead of rushing faster and faster. At least if they can stop and consider for a few minutes what they're doing, where they're going. So at least that's what this philosophy is meant for. The people should know it's not just some, frustrated, unintelligent, unsophisticated, pessimistic people are saying that actually material enjoyment without any God consciousness, without any goal of life of God consciousness, just aimlessly trying to gratify the senses, not only is a waste of time, but is very degrading. That it's a scientific philosophy based upon a scientific understanding of God consciousness, and we have to realize that, and then we'll become enthusiastic to some degree or to a large degree, and then we'll become more and more enthusiastic to give that knowledge to others. We won't simply look at people as just some unfortunate people who have elected to do their unfortunate thing. We'll understand that right now we're also in an unfortunate situation, and only by the mercy of the Bhagavatam and the disciples' succession that we become a little fortunate to at least understand what our unfortunate situation is and how we and others can also become more and more fortunate. Maybe we won't get the highest goal of life all at once, but at least we can make progress towards the goal of life, and we know what to avoid. What will actually make us unhappy in the long run, if not in the immediate, in our immediate circumstances, and how to do something positive for ourselves and for others. So, I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes. Well, that's probably the only place you put it. I don't know about that. The Bhagavad Gita, if they studied the Bhagavad Gita very carefully, I think they probably would have quoted it, or at least made reference to something in the Bhagavad Gita. But I don't think if you study the works of Hermann Goering, you'll find very many quotes from the Bhagavad Gita, or even philosophy, indirectly. So whatever, I don't know where that comes from, but none of it was actually manifested. Oh, very nice. But unfortunately, it's all material. And without Krishna consciousness, it's the Bhagavatam, at least, from the materialistic point of view, it may be considered very nice. But from the Bhagavatam, it's considered part of the material world. The only advantage that they have is that there is some possibility they may understand the value of Krishna consciousness from the mode of goodness. If they're actually coming to the mode of goodness also brings, the real mode of goodness brings some knowledge with it. And therefore there is some opportunity to appreciate what the message of the Bhagavatam is. Otherwise, it's just like being on a roller coaster, on a Ferris wheel. Sometimes you're on the top, and it is just by the nature of the Ferris wheel comes down, and then after some time, you'll be on the bottom now. So the soul who's in the mode of goodness, even Lord Brahma, unless he's actually making progress in spiritual life, eventually he comes down, and he's where we are now. So we appreciate that as much, the mode of goodness, we're trying to develop ourselves, but we're trying to develop through the process of devotional service. And we'll find that most people who are vegetarians, those people who are actually trying to develop the mode of goodness, they're generally more receptive to what we have to say. On the other hand, we find that many people who are in the mode of goodness, so-called mode of goodness, the vegans or anything, they're not very enthusiastic about killing animals. They'll even criticize us for even utilizing the animals, even farming or with the animals, or we're being cruel to the bull or drinking the milk from the cow. But they themselves are enthusiastic in all other kinds of sinful activities, taking intoxication, you know, illicit sex, abortion, that they're considering, oh, we're good people, but they don't really know what real good is. They know what the standard of goodness is. They have their own standard of goodness. And it's not coming from Krishna. Yes. I'll just read the newspapers. Well, you don't have to go to hellish planets nowadays. You know, just read the newspapers and see what's going on in this world. I mean, even Yamaraj is probably taking a few hints. Like there's a new drug going on. I forget what it's called. It's like some kind of detergent or something, some soap. I think it's called soap or something, which is much more effective than LSD. Just drives people completely crazy. So that in the middle of the highway in America, two naked people, one naked man ate the face of another naked man, and he wouldn't stop doing, actually ate a cannibal in the middle of the street, and they had to shoot him to stop him. So, I mean, you don't have to, you know, even if you don't believe in these planets that are being described, how much closer can you get to hell than was already going on in some places? Is an impediment? Why wouldn't we don't? The Bhagavatam doesn't say you have to blindly accept anything. You don't have to blindly reject it either. It's no question of accepting blindly, but why reject it blindly also? It's based upon the philosophy that we're actually a spiritual being, that we're in a material body, and there are so many bodies. So why couldn't there be such a body as described in the Bhagavatam? Have you ever had any experience of ghosts yourself personally? Have you ever met anyone who's had any experience of ghosts? Do you believe that what they were saying? Yeah, so.
I don't say that. But I'm just, because when I meet people, I met some people who say, you know,
and we're not trying to, our philosophy is not based upon trying to convince people that there's a hell if they don't believe it or believe it. But if they perform sinful activities, there has to be some kind of result. If they believe that there's no good or bad destinations according to what they're doing, we have a problem with that. If they have no direct experience of these hellish particular planets, and, you know, we have a objection that they blindly reject it. They don't have to blindly accept it. But why should they blindly reject it? According to the current philosophy, you know, if they can't accept the fact that we're not this body, that we're actually a spiritual being based upon our own direct experience, the fact that we're you know, our knowledge, therefore, is quite limited. We're not even aware of who we are. Therefore, we're not saying that you have to blindly accept anything or blindly reject it. You have to do what's necessary to get more understanding of things. And if eventually down the line there's some realization about hell, that's a different thing. But that's not what we're ultimately, that's not our objective. Our objective is to become Krishna conscious. And part of that, though, is to realize there's things that we're going to do that's going to improve our consciousness and our future destinations. And there's things that we can do which will degrade our consciousness and degrade our future destination. That's all. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, for instance, when he was preaching to the Westerners in one of his books, he seems to not support the idea of hell very strongly. But that was going to time, place, and circumstance, because that's not the major focus of our philosophy. Ultimately, we're emphasizing that Krishna is God. But if people don't believe in anything that Krishna says, it's very hard to convince people that Krishna is actually God if we think he's mistaken. Yes. Well, if you like intoxication, then get intoxicated on the holy name. If you like to eat meat, then eat prasadam. It's a much higher taste if you like to eat. Ultimately, it's eating, sleeping, mating, defending in Krishna consciousness. So we have our... It's not that because we gave up, you know, intoxication, therefore we're not experiencing any higher consciousness or any peace. No, it's all included within Krishna consciousness. Everything that people want to achieve by their materialistic or sinful activities is achieved in a much higher way without any reactions, negative reactions, by taking to Krishna consciousness. Yeah, this is Kali Yuga. We don't expect that in Kali Yuga everything is going to be in like in Sati Yuga. Utilize. We don't, as Prabhupada said, we don't expect everyone to become a great saint in Kali Yuga. But if you know it's raining outside, then you should be intelligent enough to take an umbrella. So in Kali Yuga, where there's so much rain going on, at least we should have the shelter of the association of the devotees in the Bhagavatam, so we're not going to become affected by it. Whether everyone's going to take to Krishna consciousness, well, obviously, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, at least for some time, many more than are currently taking advantage of the Krishna consciousness movement and philosophy will be taking advantage of it. How Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is going to arrange that, he hasn't discussed it with me yet. I couldn't tell you. In any case, it'll happen. But whether everyone's going to become a devotee, no, Krishna doesn't interfere with anyone's free will at any time. And therefore, Kali Yuga is a great opportunity if you want to take advantage of unrestricted, unalloyed sense gratification, along with unlimited lust and anger and greed and envy and delusion and madness. If you want to experience that to the fullest extent, then Kali will help you. If you really want to get a full effect, you know, experience one full Kali Yuga with all its, you know, at least before you get into the lower species of life. But even then, the lower species of life in Kali Yuga, even they're becoming affected by it. The bees are dying everywhere. You know, whether it's due to insecticides or everyone has their speculations because of the herbicides, insecticides, pesticides, or the ultra, you know, frequencies coming from the antennas for the mobile phones. But bees are dying everywhere. So Kali Yuga for the bees has been very unfortunate. If they could actually write an article in one of our newspapers, they'd complain. but because they haven't figured out our language, they don't know how to, they can't communicate. But I'm sure amongst each other, they're saying something's going wrong, we can't figure it out. And even the queen's bewildered, she can't give a good answer. Anything else? Thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. Thank you.